Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Friday, the 19th of January, 2007. During our broadcast, you may reach us via AIM phone at 903-551-2186. If you are listening via our blog talk radio website, simply dial the number on the screen. At any time, please send us your comments and questions to comments at libertytalkradio.com. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll try to answer your questions during our next broadcast. Folks, this station... Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rome, Paris, or Stalingrad. We must take back control of our government now, before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. It's time to shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now, on to our program. Good morning, everyone. This is a Friday broadcast, very unusual. I was stuck out of town because of the weather, and I got in late last night, so we defer the Thursday morning broadcast, and it's Friday morning, so here we are. The topic of today is the Federal Reserve. What's in your wallet? Now, I'm just going to touch on this briefly, and I'm going to have a second segment on the Federal Reserve and our monetary system on Friday evening. So I'm going to touch on it, and then I'm going to ask answer a few emails. The reason why I think this is critical, because this station is not about, is not a financial station. This is not about investing. This is not about suggesting where you should put your money. This program is about your liberty, living in the United States in a free country, which I have already suggested that is well gone. We need to take it back. Now, the Federal Reserve, the reason why I asked that question, you know, what's in your wallet, obviously to take on that ad, but because most people, and when I say most people, I will include even bankers in this. Oh, hold on a second. I think, you know, I lost somebody here. I even include bankers in this statement. I know that sounds kind of strange. I have, on occasion, gone to my bank, and I have a couple of businesses, so we have, you know, business bank accounts and whatever, and they're pleased to have us there. And I would ask the person who services our account executive or whatever they call the person, very nice people, and I'd ask that person, you know, could you explain to me, what is a Federal Reserve note? And they have difficulty answering that question. Don't ever ask a teller because she would have no idea what you're talking about. She doesn't even know, in most cases, she or he would not even know in many cases that the money that they're handling is in fact a Federal Reserve note. They've never read it before. So this is interesting. If you take the people, just the average Joe Blow, and stop them on the street and ask him, whatever money you had in your wallet, whether it be a dollar or a $5 bill or a $10 bill or a combination, you know, what do they represent? They would not know. The answer that you would receive is that, well, I have money. Now, all money is a medium of exchange. We can use, in one time they would use seashells as a medium of exchange because they were relatively rare. If you found one, you know, you would exchange it for something else, because what the psyche was in that environment, in that culture, was that if I had a seashell had a certain value. Not monetary value, had a certain value attached to it. And that means that maybe I can receive for one seashell five pieces of wood, you know, or I can receive so many ounces of grain. And that was instilled in the system, you know, in that culture. Now, the seashells actually had no value whatsoever. I mean, they were just seashells. However, if one day someone would say, seashells are worthless, that was it. If someone had hoarded seashells and said, I'm going to be the richest person on this island, and I'm going to hoard all the seashells that there are, and I'm going to be wealthy, all that had to happen is someone to say that we're not using seashells anymore as an exchange of value for goods or services. You know, the poor guy who has all these seashells is in fact broke. He may have to file bankruptcy. Right? Now, it sounds like a silly analogy. However, if you look at the Federal Reserve note, what does it say? It says that it is used as legal tender, and I don't have one in front of me, I'm just going by memory, legal tender, you know, for goods and services or something like that. Now, it really is not backed by anything. It's known as fiat currency, not the Italian car, the fiat, a fiat country, F-I-A-T. And that means it is paper and it has no value. There's nothing backing this piece of paper. I saw an interesting article once where a gentleman in Britain had printed a £1 million note, and it was an ad, he said you can buy this £1 million note for only $29 £29.95 or about $50, and it was interesting. He did it to make a point, and here it is. His note was precisely like the British pound. There was really no difference. Now, the substance of the paper may have been different. However, on his, there was one word different than that which exists on the British pound. And that is, it said on it, not legal tender. On the British pound, it said legal tender. I want you to think about that for a second. And then in the dialogue underneath that note, he said, isn't it interesting how £1 million, or you could call it $1 million if you want, or $2 million, whatever the conversion is, becomes absolutely worthless by the inclusion of one word, not. Think about that. Now, let's put that aside for a second. Let's say, for example, I asked you to buy a note or a bond or a stock. Let's say a note that would be guaranteed by a company. But you knew for a fact that this company was in debt, well beyond its ability to pay the debt. It was going in further debt, and there was absolutely no light at the end of the tunnel. The company's ability to pay off that debt, they would have to sell off their assets. What would be your enthusiasm? What level of enthusiasm would you have to purchase that note, assuming it gave you a certain percent of interest? Well, the answer is, heck, I'm not that stupid. You know, why would I carry around money? Why would I give this person my money for a note based on a company that's bankrupt? That's just stupid. And you'd be absolutely correct. Now, let us look at a Federal Reserve note. It's backed by the full faith of the federal government. The federal government is $59 trillion in debt, which it'd never be able to pay. What's the difference? Now, you say, well, Joe, you're being one of those extreme libertarians. Here you go again. You know, money's been around for a long time, blah, 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 blah. And you are correct. And yes, I'm an extreme libertarian. But I want to make a point. Does the government, would the government do that? You'd say, oh, absolutely not. I mean, if the probability of that happen is so remote that, you know, you can talk about fringe stuff all you want. Why don't you get back down to earth, Joe, and talk reality? Okay, I'm back down to earth, and now I am going to talk reality. And here is the reality. When the federal government puts itself in debt, which it always does, or further debt, in order to bail itself out, which it always does, it does this every day, it prints more money. Now, actually, the government doesn't print it. It's the Bureau of Engraving and Printing that prints the money, the BEP, you know. And then the Federal Reserve banks buy the notes from the BEP at a value of about 4 cents per note, because that's the cost of the printing and the ink, right? So the government prints more money, right? Now, what happens if there is, let's say, $500 billion outstanding in the United States? I have no idea how much money is outstanding, but let's say $500 billion, right? And you have a dollar in your pocket as of, this is day one. Now the government prints an additional $10 billion. So now there's $510 billion outstanding. What happened to the value of your $1 bill? It couldn't stay the same because there's more of it. If there's more of it, you have to depreciate the amount that is outstanding. So let's assume in this case that your $1 is now worth 99 cents. Now, what is the difference? Now, this happens, by the way, every year. There is inflation of 3-4%, somewhere around there. And some say it's much higher than that. It just depends on how you calculate it. Some people calculate it well over 5. And some people will even argue it's 15%. Let's not even go there. Let's say it's 4%. Right? So here we have inflation right now, quote, is supposedly low because the prices of oil is going down. When the price of oil peaks again, and it will, inflation is going to be out of control at that point, because we have a lot of inflation built into the system and the oil is really holding it down. The price of oil is holding it down. Let's not go there for a second. But all right, let's say it's 4%. That means if you have a dollar in your pocket on January 1st of 2006 and did nothing but held it in your wallet on January 1st, 2007, that dollar is worth 96 cents. Now, the reason for that is that the only way inflation, that you can create inflation, is not via higher prices. That's not possible. And I'll explain how that, I'll give you an analogy on that. The only way that you can create inflation is to create more money. In other words, print more money. So here we have a situation where the government bails itself out by constantly printing more money. And who pays for that? Well, you do. You just paid 4 cents out of every dollar you gave to the government because it depreciated the money you had in your wallet. Now, that item that you wanted to buy for $1 on January 1st, 2006, you deferred it and you say, no, I'm going to buy it on January 1st, 2007. Well, you go to the store and the guy says, oh, I'm sorry, that'll cost you $1.04. Well, you're 4 cents short. So now you have to dig into your reserves, take 4 cents out in order to buy that same product. Now, what is the difference between that and depreciating money or taxing you by depreciating your money in order to pay for government boondoggles? The answer is absolutely nothing, and it happens every single year. Now, so my point being is, if in fact you can have the government can depreciate your money every year, and it has done that since the Federal Reserve and fiat money was created back in 1933, has been doing that ever since, right? If it does it every year, well, what's the difference between that and just putting on there not legal tender? and making it worthless by putting that one word on there? Absolutely nothing. One is a little bit more extreme example than the other. Now, I mentioned that higher prices do not create inflation. Never has, never will. Let me explain why. Let's take a population of one person. That one person has $100, right? And every month this person buys two things. And both of these things cost $50 each. And that's all this person buys is two things. We're going to have to simplify it because if you don't, it'd be incomprehensible. So every year this person takes takes the $100 and buys thing one and let's say service two. One is $50, the other is $50, right? $50 each. Person had $100, purchased two things for $50 each, $100. Even Steven, no problem. Now, let's assume for a second that there's the same amount of money outstanding. Next month, I still only have $100. Now, item one, the guy says, hey, this guy's been buying this for a long time. I'm going to raise the price to $60, right? So I go and I buy the thing for $60. Oops, up $60. So I buy for $60. How much do I have left? $40. So I go to guy B, person B, and say, oh, I need to buy this, but I only have $40. The guy says, it's $50. I don't buy it. I don't have enough money. So nothing is inflated. Now, all right, so I don't buy it. So the guy says, oh my goodness, either I sell it for 40, you know, or I don't sell it at all. This guy's got an option. Now, we can play all those options out, but let's assume for a second, the guy says, okay, I'll sell it to you for 40, okay? Now, he says, but this is the last time. I'll do this as a special favor because you've been a good customer all these years. So next month, the guy says, man, I got 60. I'm going to try 65. I go back and I go to this guy the next month. I have my $100 and say, hey, I want to buy that thing again. The guy says, $65. I say, sorry, I only have 50. What is the guy going to do? He can say, no, you don't buy it. You see, and then you have enough money to buy the other thing for $50. In other words, if there's a constant money supply, you don't have inflation. You have readjustments in the marketplace. One thing goes up, the other thing goes down. The end result is the same. The Depression of 1929 had nothing to do with the stock market. It had to do with the government reaction to the stock market and other economic affairs at the time, where they restricted the money supply and cut off imports. So people who had money had very, very little money. They literally shut off the money supply. There was no money out there. I mean, you couldn't find the stuff. Now, 35 years ago, a gentleman wrote a book about the financial crises in the United States because of fiat money. I don't recall the author's name, and it's too long ago. But what he said was very interesting. He said, in the 1930s, during the Depression, If you had a dollar, which was backed by gold, by the way, backed by gold, it was a gold certificate. It was just like having a promissory note and going to the bank and say, let me go in my safety deposit box and get my gold out. It was exchangeable for $20 in gold at the time. Foreigners got 35, Americans got 20. Talking about the government cheating its own citizens pisses me off. Okay. Another thing that the government does to limit your liberty and your rights. All right, $20. But at least it was worth something. There was very little outstanding. If you had money, you were wealthy. You were a fat cat. And you didn't need much of it because there wasn't much around. If there's very, very few dollars and you have one, you're rich. I mean, General Motors, you could have bought a share stock from General Motors for a buck. You know, what is it today? Or GE for 50 cents or something like that. But today, you know, it's like $75 or something like that. So you see what happens. It's just the amount of money. They said, now this guy said, what will happen in the next financial crisis, whenever that may be, it may be 100 years from now, it may be tomorrow. He said, money will not be hoarded. Money will be worthless. And he's absolutely right. Look at the price of things. During the 1990s, where we said, you know, there was hardly no inflation, the dollar lost 30% of its value. Now, the only difference between 30% and no value is 70%. So I'm not such a radical on the fringe. Eventually, the dollar will be worth nothing relative to today. So what's in your wallet? the I've read books on the Federal Reserve note and how it's printed and where it goes with the Federal Reserve's banks. They purchase it, all this other stuff. And by the way, our coins do not. Coins are printed by the Mint, and I think they're distributed by the Treasury, and they bypass the Federal Reserve system, and they actually have to be purchased dollar for dollar. The 25 cents coin for 25 cents. And so you're better off with a coin, although they're worthless now because they have no value to them. They used to have 90% silver. Now they're reconditioned, recycled Coke cans, just like the European countries. But eventually what will happen is that our dollars become more and more worthless. How much was a loaf of bread back in the 1950s? A few cents? Now it's $2-3? You see what I mean? And so it's not backed by anything at all. When we say, what's in your wallet? It says Federal Reserve note. Oh, the definition of a Federal Reserve note, after all of my reading, the best that I can come up with is a promise to pay based on a promise to pay nothing. I'm going to say that again. It is a promise to pay based on a promise to pay nothing. If, in fact, there was a financial crisis and the government said, sorry, folks, we got a problem here. We don't know what we're going to do. Almost immediately, people would start saying, the American dollar, I don't think I want to accept that dollar, for that lawnmower you want to buy. What do you have? You have something else. Now, if you think that's silly, there is no difference between that and last year buying the lawnmower for $229 and buying the lawnmower this year for $239, the same lawnmower. What the supplier is telling you, or what the retailer is telling you, is that $229 is not enough fiat paper to exchange for this thing of value. This thing of value is worth more than the 229 pieces of fiat currency. Because I have less faith in the fiat currency, in other words, it's more outstanding, it's been watered down, I need a little bit more to make myself whole. That is precisely what happens. And please, everybody out there in internet radio land, write in and disagree with me. I'd love to hear it. I just would love to hear anyone disagree with that. I'd love to have a conversation on this. Now, the question that people have, they say, okay, Joe, then what do I do? Well, unfortunately today, in every portfolio, even if you have no portfolio, everyone must, absolutely must, have real money. Real money comes in the form of gold. I know what you're going to say, oh, a gold bug, idiot. This guy's a maniac, Everyone should have some of it. In countries like India, which per capita buy the most gold in any country in the world, have been through currency crises. And when they get extra money, they buy gold. And many people carry it around with them. They trust no bank. They trust nothing. Women buy gold, and they wear it as jewelry. And I'm talking about expensive gold. Now, obviously, they don't have the crime that we have here, because if women did that, they'd all be mugged. That's not true. But, you stand the risk of doing that. But that is an accepted custom there. Right? If a person carries around a lot of gold with them, they're worth something. They put no worth, no real worth, in their currency. And what is happening today is other countries are starting to divest themselves from the American dollar as the standard currency of the world. Now, people are not fleeing from the dollar. I mean, we're not seeing countries going from, 100% dollar reserves to, 10%. It's like up to 3%. Now, what these countries are saying is that, oh, no, they still have full faith in the American dollar. They're just diversifying. Right? Well, that's interesting. When you diversify, when I have a portfolio, when I diversify, what am I saying? I'm hedging against a downturn of one. So if one goes down, the other one hopefully will not follow, because it's the opposite maybe, and it'll go up. So if they have some dollars and some Swiss francs, some dollars and some euros, they're assuming that ever since all these fiat currencies are in relation to one another, if the US dollar goes up, the euro and the Swiss franc, for example, or the German Deutschmark would go up. And they're hedging against it. Why didn't they do that before? Well, they didn't do that before because they had faith in the American dollar. And they no longer have the same faith. Just like the guy said, well, I'll take $229 for my lawnmower, but nope, stop it right there, $239. He lost $10 worth of faith. Now, what does that have to do with liberty? When the government takes money out of your wallet, literally takes money out of your wallet without your consent by just printing more money to pay its debts off that have nothing to do with you, they have in fact robbed you, legally robbed you. And when someone legally robs you, that's the same as taking away your liberty, your rights, your freedom, and your property. And your money is your property. No difference. We don't think of it that way. We never think of it that way. We say, well, you know, that's inflation. No, that's not just inflation. That's the government robbing you. And we have to have a totally different change in attitude. And now I'm running late. I'm going to continue this subject on the Federal Reserve this Sunday evening. I want to read a real quick email. This one is from Alex. He asked the question the other day, in which I answered, regarding religion in the public, prayer in the public sector. And he said, you gave the standard response about prayer in public forum, as I thought you would. Libertarians are quite egalitarian when it comes to religion. However, my question to you was not about what action you would take if I or anyone else, I'm sorry, my question to you was what action you would take, I'm sorry, if I or anyone else did so in a public forum. I was not interested in philosophical sophistry aspect. Okay, all right, Alex, what would I do if we were all praying and someone was praying? I wouldn't do anything. I'd let them pray. I mean, I'm not going to force. Listen, I'm a libertarian. Do whatever you want. And if the group wants to pray, they pray. Now, if in fact it's in a meeting, for example, and the meeting is a secular meeting, it's not a religious organization, and someone got up and prayed, I wouldn't interrupt them. I'd let them do it. And then I would address the board of directors of that meeting and say, this is a secular organization. I don't understand why we are thanking Jesus, Mohammed, some god, some deity, or however, you know, the Buddha, or Confucius, or whatever the case may be. I don't understand why we're doing that. You know, we should keep it on it. And if they said, sorry, we are going to continue with our vocations, and I would quit. I'm not gonna argue with anyone. They can pray all they want. But if I belong to a secular organization, it damn well be a secular organization. If I live in a secular state, in a secular country, it damn well be a secular state, and it better be a secular nation. And not a secular nation, however it's nice to pray to a particular god. But my answer to you, Alex, is I would do absolutely nothing, not publicly, but I would do something privately. I would write a letter, speak to the board of directors or whatever, and I would seek to have an explanation. And if it wasn't changed, I would just continue going there or being part of their organization. All right. Thank you very much. He says, I'd like to listen to differing points of view. To use an analogy, you're a businessman, and as such, of all people, you know that closed fists accept no money, nor gives any away. The whole point of business is drumroll commerce. Likewise, I feel the same about the exchange ideas. I agree 100%. Thank you very much, Alex. Keep those emails coming. That's all right. I have one here. Alex wrote me a second one regarding the Ben Franklin. And it's very interesting, Alex. Thank you for this one. He said when he designed the Franklin stove, he put it in public domain and would not have it patented. Because, and I'm paraphrasing here, this is not his whole email, he said, as we enjoy great advantages from the inventions of others, we should be glad of any an opportunity to serve others by any invention of ours, and this should do this we should do freely and generously. You know, it's interesting because in European countries, there is no patent protection. You make something, that's it, you know? And so it's interesting, and they do very well with it. I don't know why we have ours and why we can't do the same. I agree with you, Alex, there. Here's one from Clark. Constitution is not where American individuals get his or her freedom. It clearly states that they are innate within us and inalienable. Our freedoms come from the Creator, whether you believe that is a guy in the sky or just evolution over the long term. The Constitution specifically prohibits a standing army. Well, you're right. I talked about the inalienable rights. That's rights that came out. Taken away, Clark, I'm with you 100% on that. The government nor anyone else can take those inalienable rights away from us, and that's the way it's stated in the Constitution. You know, I wish we would understand that instead of saying, well, the government's in charge, they can take away our freedoms, but, you know, it's for the good of society and I'll just obey. Crap and garbage. Absolutely not. Remember, dissidents, and we've got to stop thinking philosophically differently, and we've got to be dissidents in action. The Constitution, he goes on to say, specifically prohibits a standing army. Also, the military is supposed to be comprised only of those willing persons whom are supplied by each sovereign state. No federal army allowed. Now, you said it's in the Constitution doesn't allow that. He says the absence of liberty is coercion. I agree. And the only point that I see here in the Constitution, and I'm not a constitutionalist, so Clark, write me back, please, if you're listening to this program again. There is in, I think, Section 8, Article 1 of the Constitution, there is a statement regarding calling the militia in times of state militia in times of emergency, and I'm looking at it here, and I, of course, I cannot find it. Nope, I cannot find it, but I think it's in Section 8. If I am missing something other than that, please let me in. I did not know that the Constitution specifically prohibited a standing army, and would you write me on that and make me smart on that subject? I would appreciate it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've gone over as we normally have. If you were listening to Blog Talk Radio, you'll find that it's not going to be on the archive as I've gone over. Oh no, I haven't gone over. I think I've processed for 60 minutes, so I'm still on the air. Isn't that wonderful? Okay, Sunday night, 8:30. I would like to talk a little bit more about the Federal Reserve and explain how it works. It's kind of confusing. I'm going to do it in Dick and Jane language because, quite frankly, that's the only way I understand it. Because I think once we start looking at our money. Once we start looking at our money and what the alternatives to fiat currency are. Now, I mentioned gold as a standard of 4,000 years, over 4,000 years of civilizations, in that every single country, mostly empires, who have coined their own money, printed their own money, made their own coins, And eventually they started out with, you know, mostly gold or mostly silver, and then they started to debase the currency. They called debasing the currency, you know, made it like 90%, 80%, 60%, you know, in order to finance wars. It's exactly what our government is doing with the fiat currency by printing more money. What happened eventually, all those empires, all those countries eventually collapsed. And I fear that we are on that same road. Now, I'm not going, ooh, run to the street, ooh, everything's going, you know, the sky is falling. I don't mean that. I mean that we are going, look at a coin today and look at a coin that was minted, let's say, 20 years ago. Look at a quarter. That's a good example. Look at a quarter, a 25-cent piece of, let's say, 20 years ago and one today. Just look at it very carefully and just notice the significant differences. Then look at one that was minted 40 years ago, well, no, it would have to be 42 years ago or more, right? And look at the difference. 42 years ago and before, there was 90% silver. Silver is going now for something like around $13 an ounce. Wow, okay. Big difference. And now the nickel, by the way, is worth more than 5 cents. It's worth 6.5 cents because of the metal that's in it. And they're thinking about discontinuing the penny because they can't afford to print them anymore. And they're not made out of copper anymore. Interesting. Okay, debasing the currency. All right, we're going to see you on Sunday evening, 8:30. Please tune in. Tell your friends, okay? And I'll play our bumper song once again. Here we go. All righty, and we'll conclude this program by playing our bumper song. Here we go. I can't tell you how many dials I have in front of me. I need an assistant. Anyone want to volunteer and be in my studio when I broadcast? Okay, this is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Thank you so much for listening in. Remember, folks, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away from you, or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.